Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, March 6, 2018. And with me today, I have Dave Hamilton. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
I'm so glad you're here. And John Martellaro, I'm glad you are here as well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to Pi Day.
Aren't we all? Yeah.
You are way ahead of the curve on that. Did you see what I did there?
I see what you did there. Well done.
Nice.
That totally beats my aren't we all comment.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's just hop into what I think is a really interesting topic. And this comes courtesy of Cable Sasser at Panic. And Panic is a software company that makes Transmit and Coda and Prompt and Firewatch, the game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So here's the background. And this comes from a little video that Panic put together and a blog post that Cable posted yesterday. So what happened was they were getting complaints from customers saying that the download speeds that they were getting when they were downloading apps were really, really slow. Like in some cases, they might as well have been dial-up speed. And, so it wasn't like people were just impatient. They had a legitimate issue. And so the people at Panic, they did a bunch of tests trying to figure out what was going on and, just assuming that they're having like a server issue, something like that.
Sure. Yeah. You start looking inward or at least at the things you control. Like, well, all right, what did we screw up?
Yep. Right. So they did that. And they couldn't find anything wrong. So their next step was they wrote a little app that ran a download script and just put it out there for users to use so that they could collect data. And what they did was they had it download a 20 meg file from their own server, and then they set up a mirror server completely outside their system using another company, download the same 20 meg file, and then they could compare the speeds. And what they found was that pretty much everyone had good speed from both servers, except for Comcast. Coming directly from the Panic servers, speeds were really bad. But the same people getting the download from this other server, the speeds were fine.
So to me, that would sound, because I deal with this all the time, right? Here at TMO and elsewhere. Like I think about this stuff. So to me, that sounds like a routing issue from Comcast to wherever I host my stuff.
And that's a totally reasonable assumption.
Yep. And so, I might even stop there, like saying, well, I mean, they'll fix it, right? I mean, temporary routing issue, it'll get fixed.
Right. So what they found out, though, was that the problem was that this data from their own server, it's actually passing through Cogent. So that's who they've partnered
with. That's who they host with. Sure.
Yeah. So turns out that Comcast and Cogent really don't have a good relationship. And so bandwidth coming through Cogent into Comcast is running into a problem where there's just not enough bandwidth to make it happen from the Comcast side. And Cogent is also the company that's been handling a lot of the data streams for Netflix. So now you can kind of see this whole thing coming together where Comcast and Cogent, they aren't playing friendly with each other. And this has led to all kinds of fights between the companies. It's led to hearings, and it's just been this ongoing problem.
Yeah. Was it Cogent that they were blocking or throttling or shaping aggressively in the past?
Yes.
Or weren't they told to stop that?
Yes. Yes,
they are they still doing that?
That's a really good question.
And why did it take Cable Sasser, smart guy, successful guy, but it essentially an indie developer. I mean, no, they're not. They employed many people and all of that. But compared to Cogent and compared to Comcast, Panic's a tiny little company, right?
Yeah, as far as revenue goes, compared to those guys, Panic is a rounding error.
Right. And same with the number of employees. So why is this, like, why did it take them publishing it for this to be brought into the spotlight? And maybe it's not in the spotlight. It's in our spotlight because we know the Panic folks, right? And we know we use their products. But is anybody else paying attention to this? I mean, I know net neutrality is going away, but I think it's not away yet. And Comcast still has the shackles on from when they got their wrist slapped.
It sure looks that way. So, but here's what happened. Cable got a hold of people at Comcast, not their customer service people, but other people that are involved in other parts of the company. And they said, hey, look, here's what's going on. Here's the problem we're having. And Comcast's response was, we need to look into this. And so then Comcast reached out to Cogent. And they got back to Cable and they said, okay, you need to run your same tests again in a couple weeks. And we think you're going to be very pleased with the results. So they did.
Weeks?
Yeah. They said it'll be a week or two. And then when you run your test, you'll be pleased with the results. So they waited and they started running the tests again after a couple weeks. And the bandwidth was totally fine.
Okay, so did they give an excuse as to why this existed?
No.
I think this is the squeaky wheel syndrome. The one company that objected, they fixed on a fine-tuned basis, but everybody else who didn't object, they just got the same old treatment, I'm guessing.
Which is very possible. So here's my hypothesis. I think that that Comcast set up a very fixed amount of bandwidth for content coming in from Cogent, knowing full well that at certain times of the day, certain days of the week, that there simply wouldn't be enough bandwidth to handle what Cogent had going on, and just didn't bother to add any more. And so when Panic contacted Comcast and said, hey, here's the problem we're having, Comcast doesn't want to look like the bad guy right now, because the whole net neutrality thing, it's going away unless Congress does something to stop it. And even if it does go away, Comcast doesn't want to look like a bad guy for doing this.
Well, that's the next question I have. There's been a lot of discussion about net neutrality lately and the fight against the FCC decision. I wonder if this issue with this particular issue with Comcast and Panic has risen up to the levels of the national discussion of, oh, here's a great example. I haven't seen it yet this morning.
Well, and also you have companies like Comcast, these ISPs, that they don't want to react immediately to the changes when net neutrality is booted out the door, because they know that's when the lawsuits start. So if they just keep things as they are while the lawsuits play out, then they look like good guys, relatively speaking. So I have a feeling that was coming into play on some level, and I have nothing to evidence-wise to back that up. It's just my Jedi instincts. So, but when I look at this, I'm thinking, wow, this is an excellent example of what happens when we don't have net neutrality protection.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah, right. No, it's a great example. I mean, it shouldn't have happened, because it sounds like it started during a time when we did have net neutrality protections. But that aside, it is a great example of why we need these things. Yeah.
Yep.
Huh. Huh.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so, was it only certain times a day when they were shaping this traffic, or was it all the times?
It was afternoons and evenings.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Which would coincide when people would be more likely to be watching Netflix.
Yep.
And I toss that out because, hey, what a coincidence. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to comment, though, on the other side of the coin.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of this disruption of net neutrality, but in the past, I've run across discussions of the complexity of managing a massive network load. And you've got lots of different companies, and you've got different time frames, and you've got people tuning into Netflix in the evening, and you've got business operations and conferences going on in the afternoon. And so you've got lots of different players with lots of different needs, and then you at different times. And then you've got Comcast, which is trying to balance return on investment. So for the money they spend, they're trying to get the maximum bandwidth, but they're not spending infinite amount of money. And so they, in their command center, they've got to make tactical decisions probably on a minute by minute, but at least hourly by hour basis on how to juggle these trunks. And in the process of trying to optimize their network, I imagine it can appear at times as though they are discriminating against some people, when in fact they're just trying to successfully optimize their network.
Yeah,
just a thought.
No, taking that and going further with it, John, you've got a really good point. Let's say that Comcast has a fixed bandwidth trunk to, and trunk for lack of a better term, you know, connection pipe to Cogent, right? And let's say that in the mornings and in the middle of the night, the bandwidth that is needed to pass across that pipe does not hit the maximum. So nothing needs to happen. It's just like as much as it needs to go, it's great. We're not, you know, we're only hitting 50, 60, 70% of the maximum. So no problem. Mm-hmm. But in the afternoons and early evening, we do hit the maximum. So now that traffic has to be shaped so that it happens. Because there's two things that there's a lot more than two, but there's two major things that you have to think about when you're shaping traffic. One is the speed at which data gets to pass through. And number two is the priority at which data gets to pass through. Now, a great way to think about this is, let's say on your home network, you've got your photo uploads happening, mm-hmm. right? So lots and lots of data passing through. And so speed is going to matter in terms of how long it takes that operation to complete. With email, relative to photo uploads, with email, it's very, very minuscule amounts of data. So the thing that will make it seem fast or slow to you is how quickly that data gets to start leaving your network or start coming back into your network, right? If with your photo upload, you tell it to start and it has to wait a second before it can send, you're not really going to notice that in the grand scheme of things. It's, you know, it's a big, you know, blob of data. And so it needs to just pump that stuff out, and it's going to take an hour. If it's delayed a second or even 5 seconds before it starts, that's no big deal. If your email is delayed a second or 5 seconds, even though it's much less data, it's going to seem really slow.
That's
so,
a good point.
Right? So yep. There's prioritization that needs to happen there. And you need to, you know, when you're managing a network and designing devices that are going to do this, you look at the type of traffic that it is and you prioritize it differently so that nothing gets to bog down anything else. When you can avoid that. Obviously, there's some scenarios where you're like, well, we're at the corners of everything. There's nowhere else to squeeze, so sorry. And so it's possible that they had set their traffic shapers, for lack of a better term, to do some things where it slowed down the overall speed while still allowing this, you know, quick turnaround, like the latency was prioritized over the speed. And that's what Panic noticed is, and maybe they set the speed. You know, remember, Netflix bandwidth, it doesn't take very much bandwidth for an HD movie to come through. right?
And about 5 megabits per second.
5 megabits per second, right? And many of us, I know there's some of you listening that, you know, that say, well, I'd be lucky to get 5 megabits a second on my, you know, rural DSL line or whatever it is. And we do, we feel for you. Mm-hmm. Less so and less so every day, but only because it's been so long since we've had slower speeds like that. But I do remember that. But most of us are in a scenario where we've got, you know, 50 megabits, 100 megabits, 200 megabits. That's very common for a Comcast customer, right? Is to have between 50 and 200 megabits per second. You could have a gigabit, 1,000 megabits. So if you had, say, a 200 megabit pipe, but things to the path to Netflix were slowed down such that each user would only get, say, 10 megabits of pipe, well, that's going to be way more than you need. It's literally double what you would need for a Netflix movie. So you wouldn't notice that a Netflix movie was coming in slowly because you can't watch it any faster, right?
That's true. Yes.
Right. You can only watch at a certain speed. So you don't really, as long as it's not buffering and pausing, you don't really care. As long as it's going a little bit faster than 5 megabits per second, then you're totally fine because you aren't going to get those problems. So let's say they limited it to 10. Well, when you download something, you're definitely going to notice because you are waiting for it to finish. It can come in as fast as your connection allows. And the difference between 10 and 200 is huge.
That's very significant.
So it's very significant. So it's possible that they said, well, yeah, like we're not going to slow down Netflix. And in the sort of baby with the bathwater approach, they sort of treated, well, everything that comes in from Cogent, especially during these hours, that's Netflix. So, you know, that's fine. We'll give people 10. Like, nobody's going to notice. And that way our network remains fast and happy. And so perhaps I think they were very much aware of it. I don't know. I can't say. I can come up with a very plausible scenario where it was not malicious at all.
Dave, what we've explored here is something very important, and that is how difficult it is to point to a specific action and a specific intent. The network is so complicated, and there's so much, as you said, transmission shaping and forming, and the complexity of the software going on, that you cannot, by exterior examination, prove that there's some sort of non-net neutrality action going on. You actually have to find the memo from the chief technology officer to the engineer that says, do this.
Yeah.
In absence of that memo and some explicit intention, it's almost impossible to diagnose the network. And that's something these class action lawsuits are probably going to run into.
Mm-hmm.
It's trying to prove that there was specific intent rather than just fallout from the way the network operates.
Yeah, I don't, right, like these decisions won't go all the way to the CEO. In fact, they may not make it past an engineer or a team of engineers, and a team might just be two, mm-hmm. right? Where, you know, there's two people sitting down and one of them says to the other, hey, you know, here's what we see every day. I know we keep getting these calls and like somebody's breathing down our neck to figure this out. Here, I have this idea. Should we try it? Yes. So we try it. Like, this is how problems are solved. It's like especially real-time network stuff. Often it's seat-of-the-pants, solutions are tested. And you might test it on a segment of the network and say, oh, yeah, whoa, that one's going well. Like, you know, try. I've got three different ideas. Great. A, B, and C. We segment off the network. You know, 5% gets A, 5% gets B, 5% gets C. The rest gets what they previously had. And he's like, you look. Oh, look, B's doing awesome. Great. Roll that to A and C.
Roll it out.
Yeah, everybody's still happy? Okay, great. And let's roll it to a little more. Finally, it's like you're not even thinking about it anymore because you're on to the next 50 problems that you have to solve. So, yeah, we don't know, right? It could just as easily have been a very malicious decision from the CEO all the way down. Like, we could create a beautiful tinfoil hat conspiracy, and it's totally possible that that's what happened. But it's also entirely possible that the only people that know about this are some engineers, and they might not even work there anymore, right? Like, it could have been a decision made years ago. There's no institutional knowledge of how or when or why. It was just part of a solution, and you move on.
Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from
magic. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, regardless of what was happening behind the scenes, I still think this is a great example of why net neutrality is so important, because you never know where it's going to impact you. You know, what is the next thing that's going to be unavailable or available with a pain point? And in this case, it turned out to be downloads of apps from Panic Zone servers. And
don't mess with developers.
Don't mess with developers, because
yeah, they'll figure it out.
They're going to write scripts. Yeah, and so to be clear, I'm not saying Comcast was intentionally engaging in anti-net neutrality activity. It's just this is a really great example of what happens if you didn't have net neutrality. So
we need a new term for non-net neutrality. Some nice succinct phrase that is the opposite of net neutrality,
like net capitalism.
Yeah,
there we go.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't say that. I don't say that to imply that capitalism is bad. It's just now it's not net socialism anymore, right?
No. So we keep searching for this term, like, you know, violation of net neutrality. We need something that's the inverse, that's more direct.
They're engaging in net capitalism.
Net capitalism. It's either net socialism, where everything's equal, or it's net capitalism, where things get priority based on how important they present themselves to be.
Okay, well, we'll start using that at the Mac Observer. I like that.
There you go.
I like it too.
You know, like, pick one. It's, yeah. Of course, those are very politically charged words, and I don't mean them that way, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It also sounds good.
Yeah.
So we're out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up. Dave, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me. This was a fun one.
This was a lot of fun, yes. And John, thank you for being here as well.
Hey, you're welcome. Nice to be here.
Yeah, this really has been fun today. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.